Welcome back to Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott, Wolf Thomas Trance here with you, coming to you live from the Kintech studio. And you can text in on the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line. We got a few questions here, so we'll hit some of them in this segment. So keep them coming in on the text line. By the way, Canucks playing in Carolina tonight in just a few hours, 4 o'clock. So I guess this afternoon here, but tonight in Carolina. Expected, if you missed the whiteboard, expected to get Elias Pettersson and Thatcher Demko back this game. But we will see once they take line rushes, do all that stuff. And we'll know for sure then if those two are returning to the Vancouver Canucks lineup when they take on the Hurricanes, who are playing their fifth game in 7 days, second half of a back-to-back. So the schedule, as we said, very much going in the Canucks' favor. 650-650, Dunbar Lumber text line. Wanted to hit a few questions. This one, unsigned. Hi, Thomas and Josh. Oh, sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. I just want to point everyone to social media where Brad Marchand directly addressed the rumors today, or the reporting today, from WEEI. I think the gentleman's name is Keefe. And I just want to note one thing. The way that he went at the individual reporter, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I love it, because so often you get the thing where it's like the media, like some faceless entity, right? When generally speaking, in these instances, it is one report. And I think it just shows a tremendous level of maturity on Marchand's point, on Marchand's part, that he was able to sort of distinguish, you know what I'm saying? That hey, this wasn't a media issue. This was a report issue. And I think that's far too uncommon when these sorts of instances crop up. But I thought it was a very good look on the Bruins captain.
It is also easier to do when you're this early, I guess, in a potential rift in the locker room, right? Where it's like, hey, one person has reported this, and Brad Marchand's like, okay, I'm going to talk about that one person and tell them they're wrong. Whereas I think,
as opposed to it being every insider in the business,
exactly.
Good point.
The Miller Pettersson thing, they have like a list of names they have to go through before it's all done. 650-650. This one from Sonny about the Pastrnak Marchand beef, quote unquote, saying, what do you guys think about the Pastrnak and Marchand beef? Oh, right. It's not Vancouver. Only happens in Vancouver, right? That's from Sonny. So I feel like for the Pettersson Miller thing, for a long time, there's multiple parts to this. We in local media had been talking a lot about this because national media and the Vancouver Canucks themselves, people within the Vancouver Canucks, had been talking about it. And we reacted because we are local media doing a show that talks about the Canucks for 2 hours, multiple shows per day. That's how it goes. We're going to react to these things. I also think that most of us for a while were like, when has this happened? Like this public of a beef between players, and we were all looking for examples. It's hard to find examples because in a lot of situations it does get if it seems like there's issues between players, it does get addressed rather quickly because teams don't want this outside noise, especially when you're in a battle for a playoff spot like the Boston Bruins are, to impact the team unless there's something they think they can gain from it. And you kind of mentioned this, alluded to it last segment in the whiteboard. I do wonder if the Canucks are okay with the noise because they want more out of JT Miller and Elias Pettersson. They want to make these players uncomfortable. And whereas in Boston, it's like there's kind of no need for it. It's just a different situation where in Vancouver, they could stand to benefit. This could be a motivating factor in regards to Elias Pettersson and JT Miller. All the noise, we'll see if it actually is, but it did feel like that was maybe the approach if we think back to when Patrick Alvin spoke on it recently.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's a sage observation to note that while things sometimes seem so unique, right? Like delicate little flower stuff, right? Because we're so tunnel vision focused on the Canucks, on this program, right? These sorts of innuendos, rumors, reports, credible or not, are relatively universal. The NHL is a stressful business, right? Like these things happen occasionally. And the other side of this that I think is notable is, you know, the fact, like I've heard a lot of, you know, my colleagues, and we've certainly talked about it on the show. Like, why did Patrick reinstigate this with that interview with Ian McIntyre right before the new year? And, you know, one thing I'd note is we've seen this team come out and play with considerable edge in just about all their games since. You know, like,
yeah.
Why would Patrick Alvin do this? I think you're kind of seeing it on the ice.
Yeah, and if the results had followed, I think people would be a little more accepting of it, I guess. But, and that might not be the right word, but it does feel like they're trending in the right direction. But the results do need to follow. 650-650, this one unsigned. Hi, Thomas and Josh. With both Seattle and New Jersey going from missing the playoffs in 2022 to the second round in 2023 to missing the playoffs again in 2024, they're also following different paths this season. If Vancouver misses the playoffs this year, whose path are they most likely to follow next season? Seattle's or New Jersey? So that would be like you're looking at this season's Kraken or Devils. If the Canucks don't make the playoffs this year, or let's say even like, hey, they make round one and don't have an outstanding playoff run and maybe get bounced in five or six games, whatever it is. Do you think they are more likely to be bounced back, be the Devils, or this is their true self, they are the Kraken?
Well, this one's a tricky one for me because I don't think they're... Like, I think the Devils are a genuine cup contender in a way that the Canucks, I don't know that the Canucks have that same amount of juice. So I kind of don't love that comparison, just given just the sheer amount of talent
it's such
that
a,
the Devils have up and down the line.
There's so much more of a high-end team that even the Canucks, when they're firing on all cylinders, can be. Like the upside in New Jersey, especially now that they've added Jacob Markstrom, is, like you said, cup contender, whereas Vancouver, you're still multiple pieces away from being that, even if Elias Pettersson comes back and he's old Elias Pettersson and everything kind of gets better. You can make the playoffs if you're the Canucks, and you can look at it and say, like, hey, if these things break your way, you can go on a cup run. But that making that case for New Jersey is a much easier case to make.
Well, the Canucks have one Hughes. Yeah. The Devils have two Hugheses.
That's just impossible to
combat. They have an extra Hughes.
Yeah. Well, yeah. you considered the fact
they
that
they have double the amount of Hughes?
But the Canucks have double the amount of Elias Pettersson. Well, two more, not
that's,
double.
That's true, but the Devils have Jesper Bratt. Right, they have this complete blue line. I mean, you're talking Dougie Hamilton, but you're also talking Brett Pesce. You know, you're talking about the upside that could hit. Should what was the defender, the Slovakian defender they took in the
Nemec
with the second overall pick just a couple of years? Nemec isn't even a huge contributor for them, but that's like coming down the line. Like Kovacevic is sick. That Fitzgerald kid, like they have like eight defenders. You know what I'm talking about? That we'd be like, wow, that's. That's a guy we hope can really help the Canucks on their second pair. They certainly have six defenders above the Myers line.
Yeah, and the Myers line.
You know, and then you talk about Timo Meier. You talk about, you know, the dog Dawson Mercer. To me, the Devils taking the step back they took last year was like stunning. A shock.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it was for everyone, right? Like many people going into last season, they were the sexy pick for potential like cup. Like they definitely weren't the favorite, but they were one of the teams that were in the conversation. And they just,
sure.
it was such an underwhelming season from New Jersey last year. So this was a much more expected bounce back for the Devils.
Yeah. And then all of this said, because I think the fact is that I would reject the Devils as an analogy for, you know, how this Canucks team can bounce back, I would also reject the Kraken as an analogy for the Canucks, you know, inability to bounce back should they struggle to do so, specifically because when you think about, for example, like the Seattle run, the Seattle sort of glow up was built so heavily around what they got in his sophomore season from Matty Beniers, right? Mm-hmm. And Beniers doesn't have the track record of a Pettersson or a Miller, or certainly don't have a Quinn Hughes. They don't have high end talent like the Canucks do. You know what I mean? So I think the Canucks' dream season last year was, we had a reasonable expectation that it would be more durable than what Seattle accomplished, you know, the year they went to the second round and defeated the defending Stanley Cup champion Colorado Avalanche, and actually took Dallas to get 7 games as well. I guess the truth is that the analogy is pretty strong in terms of what the dream season looked like. But I think the future outlook for the Kraken coming out of that season was always, do they have enough elite talent, right, to get over the hump here? Mm-hmm. Whereas I think we look at the Canucks, and that's far lesser question. Not all dream seasons and followed up by nightmare seasons are created equal. I think the Devils had a higher ceiling when they, you know, went to the second round against the Carolina Hurricanes than the Canucks did last season anyway. I think the fact that they endured a nightmare season the next year was a bigger surprise than what the Canucks are dealing with at the moment. And also, by the way, it was a bigger surprise in part because it was more dramatic, right? Like, the Devils were way further out of the mix than the Canucks are today last year. I think the bounce back that they've been able to author, I think the Canucks would have to get an awful lot right to sort of be a team that we're putting on equal footing with the Devils 12 months from now. So, you know, the Devils I'd put as a poor comp for the Canucks, because that to me is a higher end build. The Canucks, however, I would put in a different tier or category than the Seattle Kraken, who are now in sort of year two of flat results following their dream campaign, in part because the Canucks glow up last season made less sense, felt less ephemeral in the moment, right? Mm-hmm. There's the way that they've sagged is not as dramatic as what happened to the Canucks are still favorites to make the playoffs. They're still minus 180 to make the playoffs at this juncture. They're in a playoff picture as we speak right now. They're in a playoff spot as we speak right now. So I think they're, you know, likely anyway, not overwhelmingly likely, but likely to go back to back as a playoff team in any event, even if this isn't a team that is, you know, I mean, they're 28 or plus 2,800 to win the Stanley Cup. They're not being viewed as a contender by the gambling markets at the moment, so that still represents a step back, but it's not as dramatic as what the Kraken dealt with last year. And going into next season, I think we're still going to be pretty comfortable when we pick the Canucks to be a better team, a more imposing team, a team far more likely to gain 95 plus points than we'll choose the Kraken to be, right? So I think all three situations are extremely distinct. I don't think the Canucks are going to follow the Kraken path, even this season, because I think the Canucks are going to make the playoffs this season. Yeah. And I absolutely think they have a path to being a pretty imposing side down the stretch and a tough outcome playoff time, which obviously the Kraken weren't able to do following up in their second year. And frankly, neither were the Devils. But the Devils now mean business, as we sort of expected them to once they had that glow up in the 2022-23 campaign.
It is Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott, Wolf, Thomas Drantz here with you back into the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line. This one ran deep from Surrey. Not to undermine how good he's been this season, but Connor Garland is a minus 10 in his last 10 games. Do you think Tocchet should get him on the Pettersson line if Pettersson is back to try and get him going? Clearly playing him big minutes whilst being the line driver is not working. That's Randeep from Surrey. For me personally, like, I still haven't loved the mix of Elias Pettersson and Connor Garland when they're together. Though I do agree, I think lately Garland has not been the early season, has not been in the early season form we saw from him to start the year. But I don't know if the answer is putting him with Elias Pettersson. Maybe it's worth a shot, but I don't know if it's the especially the long-term answer for this team, because I do think the best version of the Vancouver Canucks is when Connor Garland is driving his own line and doing it effectively in the bottom six.
So he's minus 10 across his last 10 games.
Yeah, I didn't that's fact wild. Check. I trusted Randeep from Surrey, but it wouldn't
minus
be surprising.
Two against the Habs, minus two against the Habs, minus two against the Avs, or sorry, the Predators, minus one against Seattle, minus two against Calgary, minus two against Vegas, which I guess is in the window. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And minus one against Utah. So yeah, since the Colorado game, he's failed to be a plus in any game. And okay, so his plus minus looks ugly, but I don't think that really reflects the reality of his game. The truth is that 5-on-5 goal differential, the Canucks have been outscored by two in Connor Garland's minutes. Four goals for, six goals against. This is why plus minus is so bogus. Like, he's in his 5-on-5 minutes, right? His 5-on-5 minutes alone, the Canucks have been outscored by two goals across his 10 games, and he's eating a minus 10, a dash 10. Like, what are we doing here? That doesn't tell us anything mm-hmm. about Connor Garland's form. In that period, by the way, Connor Garland has the best shot attempt differential among all Canucks players. The Canucks have outshot their opponents 64-50 with him on the ice across that 10-game stretch. And they're getting outscored because, the goaltending when he's on the ice, .880. The shooting percentage when he's on the ice, 6.25. Like, this is a run of bad luck in which the team is only narrowly losing Connor Garland's 5-on-5 minutes on the scoreboard, while actually still winning those minutes territorially and just not getting rewarded for it because, there just hasn't been much finish and the goaltending has been, putrid, frankly, in his 140 5-on-5 minutes across the last 10 games. Now, he is playing a lot. He leads all Canucks forwards in ice time over that stretch, but he should. Like, he should be leading all Canucks forwards in ice time over that stretch. He's been their best forward, frankly, with the exception of JT Miller. So their second best forward. The truth is that Connor Garland right now, with how this team is built and who's going, less Garland is not the answer. And I have zero concerns about his form. I will say the Montreal game I thought was an unusually quiet one from him. It was one of those games where the Garland stuff that we're used to in terms of him controlling play beneath the hash marks and making plays and being a driver was kind of absent. But man, like their one win since Christmas was over the Kraken, the shootout win, right? And that was a Garland game. Like, that was a Garland game.
Yeah, anytime he plays the Kraken, he just he gets them the points.
Yeah, I mean, Garland is the least of this team's concerns. That minus 10 is more than anything an argument to ignore plus minus entirely. He's been still driving. Like, he's been still driving on a team that's struggled to control possession during this stretch. Connor Garland, least of this team's problems. Ignore the plus minus. Guy rocks, needs to keep playing at the top of the lineup. They need him right now, period.
We also got a lot of questions, so I'll just put it all in one, because people saw the potential beef between Brad Marchand and David Pastrnak today. That was quickly quelled, or potentially quelled, quashed by both players. But we got a bunch of texts. Who says no? Elias Pettersson for David Pastrnak. The Bruins say no, right?
Sorry, what? The
Elias Pettersson for David
what
Pastrnak.
Are you talking about?
If you one for one.
I mean, doesn't I don't know. I don't know. I don't think I'd do it. No.
If you're the Canucks, you wouldn't do it? My thing. I think both teams say no. It's like
I think that's probably right. Mm-hmm. I mean, Pastrnak's unbelievable. Pastrnak's an elite winger in this league. I mean, we're talking about a guy who pretty much consistently scores 40, flirts with 50 goals, multiple 100-point seasons. He's point per game again this year. He's been point per game or better at basically every year since 2018. Like, my God, okay. You know what? I might change my mind. I think I say yes, but I say yes while holding my nose. Because I think Pettersson's in that company on a true talent basis, even though he hasn't been in 11 months. I think the problem is that I still have a lot of faith in the talent. I just have no idea why we haven't seen it in 11 months. And yeah. So that risk profile makes me nervous. I just don't think you want to trade Pettersson for just about anything, because this profile of player, he's younger, he plays a premium position. You know, I think he's far better defensively. Like, he's far more attentive as a two-way piece. And yeah, Pastrnak. Damn, I think if you're Vancouver, you probably do it, but it sucks to think about.
Yeah,
like it's just one that like sucks. Like, Pastrnak's probably the caliber of guy that you have to consider doing that for. But you know, I don't know that both teams say no. I think when you really think about it, Pastrnak is probably a top 10 player in hockey, and Pettersson I think should be and has the talent to be, but hasn't been for 11 months, and that creates enough of a risk profile that I think you do it if you're Vancouver, and you don't do it if you're Boston.
This last question from Michael: why are so many Canucks
God, I hate that one.
The Michael one? Oh, the Pastrnak.
The Pastrnak.
I know.
I that one threw me for a loop. I feel like worse about myself having gone through the motions of figuring it out.
Fair enough. Michael, this one I like. Why are so many Canucks defensemen wearing prime numbers with 7 in them? So Carson Soucy wears number 7. That's a prime number. Derek Forbert wears 27. That's not a prime number, though. 47 for Noah Juulsen. That is a prime number, I think. And then Tyler Myers, 57. Oh, voice crack, 57. Also not a prime number, but Vinny Desharnais, 73, I believe, is a prime number. A lot of 7s on the Canucks defense. So that's fun. Thanks, Michael.
Yeah. You know what I've always thought a defense should do? I've always thought it would be really cool if you assembled a group of, like, you know, not necessarily trees, but like ideally like fast physical defenders, almost like a whole team of Trouba-like defenders in terms of play style, not in terms of quality.
Mm-hmm.
I've always thought it'd be cool if you had this like big, fast, physical defensive core and gave them all numbers in the 50s, like an NFL linebacker.
Oh, core. Yeah. Yeah, that'd be sick.
Like, I've always thought that would be such a sick thing for a team to do. Like, all defensemen wear 51, 52, 53, 54, 55, 56. Like, just like down the lineup, all your defenders wear 50s. The number 5 is like wide. It makes everyone look big.
Yeah.
And I just think it would be like such an imposing thing for a physical defensive group to have. Like, why have we never had an NHL blue line group? At least that I can think of. Correct me if I'm wrong. Inbox, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. But we've never had like a Legion of Boom,
yeah,
blue line group.
We need more or like cohesion on a defense.
Yeah,
just be a unit.
Yeah, that would be a unit, and like consider yourself a unit and play with a certain mentality and on and on. Like, I would be such a sucker for that. I'd be so in, and I have no idea why it's never happened, but I feel like implementing uniform numbers would be a start. I would love to see it.
That's step one. It is Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott, Wolf, Thomas Dratz. Keep your texts coming in on the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line. We'll hit more as the show goes on. But on the other side, Dmitry Filipovich, host of the PDO cast, will join us as he does every Friday. It is Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott, Wolf, Thomas Dratz. Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott, Wolf, Thomas Dratz here with you, coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics, working together with you in step. And you can text in on the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their 3 locations to serve you, or online at DunbarLumber.com. We now welcome in Dmitry Filipovich, host of the PDO cast, half an hour early today because we have Barkley Parnetta, Vancouver Giants GM, at 1:30. Appreciate you taking the time, Dmitry. How are you?
I'm good. It's kind of weird not doing the final segment.
I know.
Of the week, but
I'm gonna be so checked out after this, but then have to lock in because there's still half an hour to go.
Um,
Oh, we're both pausing. We're both pausing.
Did you check out early, Josh?
Yeah, what's I checked out early. We both paused.
No, Tom, you look like you're ready to jump in.
Yeah, I was looking at you. You did the lean back, and I was like, surely he's about to talk. This is the problem with a delay, by the way. But that's okay. Do you want me to talk or do you want to talk?
Excuse me. No, I got it. Okay. Dimitri, Canucks playing the Hurricanes. The Hurricanes, I thought they could have scored 12 on the Leafs, given what they were generating off the rush last night. They're playing their fifth game in 7 nights. They've got Dustin Tokarski in net. I'm still someone who remains relatively optimistic, I think, relative to market about this Canucks team and their ability to get this straightened out. But I feel like this is one you have to win if you're a good team.
Yeah, certainly on the second of a back-to-back with Tokarski in net. I feel really old realizing that Dustin Tokarski's 35 years old.
He's 35 and he's still, I was saying in the first segment, I'm like, I'm just so happy he's still around.
Oh, hanging around, that's stretching the definition of what hanging around is. No, you're right. He's in the NHL. Remarkable. He's played about 40 games the past 3 years across a couple teams and hasn't posted a .900 save percentage in that time. So I think certainly gettable. And this Hurricanes team in general isn't a defensive juggernaut. They've been in previous seasons. They've been much more susceptible to giving up breakaways and rush opportunities and inner slot shots. So it's not as daunting of a matchup to actually try and create against them as it's been in years past. I think the opportunities should theoretically be there for this Canucks team. I know especially early in games, they've struggled themselves to create and get shot opportunities. So we'll see how that goes. But this is about as good of a situation to play the Hurricanes as I think you're going to get in the regular season.
Have the Hurricanes changed about how they're approaching things offensively? Because I think we're used to the Hurricanes just being like, okay, we're going to put everything on net and it's going to work out. What have they changed about how they're approaching offense?
Yeah, I think they've certainly acknowledged that they had to increase their risk profile a little bit. You saw that with some of the moves they made, bringing in guys like Jack Roslovich and Dmitry Orlov previously. They're certainly taking more chances, pushing more offensively, trying to involve their defensemen off the rush. And so that's led to opportunities. If you watch that game last night against the Leafs, Willie Nylander had 3 breakaways in the first 7 minutes or so and scored on one of them, but certainly wasn't for lack of trying. And so I think it's a net positive for the Hurricanes because a lot of their offensive struggles in previous postseasons were very predictable. I think they've gone ahead and tried to change that. I think they still need to add probably another top flight scorer to actually get over that hump in the postseason, but they've acknowledged their shortcomings, I guess, of previous postseasons and tried to address it. So I applaud them for that. And it is a different team than it's been in previous ones. They are pushing more offensively, giving up a bit more defensively. And so it should make for a more fun, I guess, viewing experience than it's previously been whenever you face this team.
What do you guys think of Marty Natchez this year? Because it feels like for a while, it's been like, okay, he's going to take that next step. He has all these tools and he'll put it together. And then this is the year finally where so far he's got 48 points in 42 games. Has he taken the next step? Is this kind of like a hot start that might fizzle out, or is he showing signs of hitting that potential?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I think he certainly started off absolutely red hot. It coincided with him bleaching his hair blonde. I also, as you saw me in the studio around that time, had done so as well. Didn't really enjoy the same results that Marty Natchez had with his point production. But I mean, he's an immensely talented player. You watch him play and the stuff he can do with the puck, the creativity, how sort of effortlessly he moves around the ice. He's so fun to watch, and he really gives this team that much needed playmaking dynamic that they don't otherwise have that much of up front. So he's certainly a player to watch. I feel like he's taken a bit of a step back recently from that hot start, but I mean, he can go off any night for a 4 or 5 point night. So you really got to keep your eyes on him.
With the Leafs, who the Canucks go to play on Saturday, I mean, how similar do you view the Canucks and the Maple Leafs being at this point? And I don't just mean in terms of like ceiling or long-term outlook, but just stylistically, it feels like there's a kinship between these two teams right now.
Yeah, there is. Certainly the Leafs this year, part of it is Austin Matthews missing as much time as he did, but they've been struggling to generate consistent offense, especially compared to previous seasons. Now that Matthews is back, though, I know that him and Marner were on for, I believe, all 6 Hurricanes goals last night, but he'd been playing well previously. So, yeah, I mean, I think this Leafs team has a bit more offensive punch at full health because they can throw that Matthews-Marner combination at you and then Nylander and Tavares as well. But stylistically, what Tom's kind of hinting at in terms of playing more of a methodical dump and chase game, much more north-south than east-west, there's certainly an element to that. And I think this Leafs team under Craig Berube this year is much different than the previous versions, I guess, we've seen of this club.
Do you think that's good for when they get to the postseason? Because it feels like, hey, during the regular season, you might not be as offensively dynamic, and we've seen that from the Leafs in the past, and they've shown this ceiling. The style they're playing, do you think it's better suited for the postseason, or are they going to run into the same issues they have in the past?
I mean, it's tricky because I get the logic, and certainly they've sort of telegraphed what they're trying to do, and then they go out and they bring in Chris Tanev in the offseason, and I do like that. The reason they've fallen short previous seasons is because they've struggled to generate offense when it mattered most in games 6 and 7 against some of these defensive clubs. And I look at this team, and I guess theoretically in terms of ground and pounding and kind of manufacturing dirty goals, they're a bit more well-equipped to do so. But I still think unless they make a big add for a top six forward, I wonder in a playoff series whether they're going to be able to A, keep up with the speed of some of these opposing teams, but also B, actually be able to create enough offense to get over the hump yet again. It seems like they're approaching it a different way, but I feel like some of the questions or concerns linger just in a bit of a different way.
Yeah, it's weird, Dim, because I honestly feel like in some ways the Leafs have a lower ceiling than some of the teams that have come up short in the past, and yet the Atlantic, aside from the Florida Panthers, feels more wide open. So it feels like their path to playoff success is more straightforward than it has been, and yet their chances of actually doing anything with it, to me anyway, feel far lower than they have in some of the previous years where that team has come up short.
Yeah, I think the floor is certainly higher, and especially in a round one matchup, if they are able to win the Atlantic and stay away from a Tampa Bay-Florida round one matchup, we'll see what happens. I know, Tom, you've kind of talked about how a team like the Senators at least theoretically could give them trouble. We saw the Senators have a really good game against them earlier this year with their team speed, but they've been struggling themselves. They can't really generate a bunch of offense. It's very wide open. I believe the Blue Jackets and the Canadiens, at the time we're speaking, are the two wildcard teams in the East. So yeah, in terms of unpredictability of opposition or how good those teams even are, finishing atop the division for a team like the Leafs is a massive advantage compared to having to be stuck in that 2-3 matchup with the Florida teams.
That Eastern Conference race is pretty wild right now. Because just looking at points, it's the Blue Jackets occupy the second wild card, their first wild card in point percentage. Mm-hmm. But just points overall, you've got a 7-point gap between the second wild card and the Buffalo Sabres, who are last in the Eastern Conference right now. I wonder how that's all going to impact the trade deadline. And like it might be good for a team or two in there to accept your losses early and maybe get ahead of the market and be one of the few teams selling early, as opposed to trying to draw it out, get through the trade deadline, then you realize you're not as good as you might have thought.
Yeah, I think the Penguins, and we already saw them sell a little bit right earlier with the Lars Eller trade, they've sort of acknowledged that if you want one of their players, there's certainly available, especially a guy like Marcus Pettersson. So I could see them doing a bit of a lateral move, at least like that. They, though, I don't think they want to completely tank by any means because they still want to be competitive while Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin are still there. You look at the other teams, though, the Red Wings, for example, like they're so incentivized to kind of keep pushing forward and competing. They change coaches under Steve Yzerman. They really want to get back into the postseason. So a lot of these teams that are on that bubble are very incentivized to stick around and not really pull the plug, at least like optically from a public perspective, acknowledging it to your fan base. So there's very few teams in that mix that I could see talking themselves into that, even though it probably will be the prudent move from a business perspective.
The playoff bar in the East is projected to be in like the mid-80s. At the moment. Now it won't be there, right? You're going to get a team that gets hot and actually snags. You might get a couple teams that get hot and actually snag a spot here. But it is remarkable to me, Dim, when I look around the league, and other than the Sharks, the Blackhawks, and I guess maybe the Sabres, but even they're only 7 back, it just feels like there's no sellers relative to what we're used to at this time of the season. Like, what is this going to be the quietest deadline ever, or could it be?
Yeah, we'll see. I'm sure the insiders are going to hype it up leading up to it. It's going to be the busiest, the craziest one yet. I was thinking about this.
Well, could be. What's crazier than nothing?
That would be crazy.
Something, maybe.
Yeah, something would be crazier. I was thinking about this today. I don't know if you guys agree, but I think the Blackhawks are the only, by like the traditional definition, truly bad team in the league right now. Like, obviously, the Sabres record isn't good. The Predators have struggled a lot. The Sharks are down there in point percentage. But even if you watch the Sharks play, every time they lose, it's a competitive, like, one-goal game at the end where they kind of blow it, because they're not actually that good. But it's not like they're a complete tire fire rebuild, like, tank team either.
They're a fun kind of bad.
Especially with when Askarov's in net. Like, they're legitimately competitive. They just beat the Lightning and the Devils back-to-back. Obviously, when Georgiev's in net, it's a bit of a different story. But beyond that, it feels like the Blackhawks are, though, really, truly the only bad team that it's like, you can mark this one off as a win. And even they just recently beat both the Canadiens and the Avalanche, who were two of the hottest teams in the league previously. So yeah, it's a bit of a strange year in that regard, where there are good and bad teams, but the delineation between them is as thin as it's ever really been.
So looking forward. Oh, go ahead.
No. Okay. Sure. Beyond the Maple Leafs, the Canucks are going to see this Jets team. Obviously they've cooled off a little bit since that hot start, but so I want to do an exercise to talk about the Jets as we talk about the Jets.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to tier the Western Conference from the standpoint of teams you actually think are going to win the Western Conference, right? Like, Western Conference favorites, how would you tier the top end teams in this conference at the moment?
That's a great question. I would still have probably the Oilers and the Stars in the top tier, and they were the two representatives in the Western Conference final last year. I haven't really seen anything to make me think otherwise. Then I would probably go with the Golden Knights and the Avalanche in a tier. You can make the argument the Golden Knights deserve to be in the higher one. They're first in the West and have been playing really well. They're going to make an ad certainly by the deadline. The Avalanche have some of their health questions and concerns, although they've been really good since they got Blackwood. And then it's pretty open after that. Then you get into the Jets, the Canucks at their best theoretical at full health. I'm skeptical that the Wild are going to be doing it this year, although they've kept winning despite all of their injuries. And then the Kings, of course. But the Kings are destined for a round one matchup with the Oilers, which for the fourth straight year just seems like absolute hell to be stuck in and this endless loop for them. So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty wide open, though. Just as I said previously, like, for both conferences, there's good teams, but it doesn't feel like there's anyone that's really, I guess, beyond the Oilers at times, cemented themselves as being truly terrifying in terms of the gear they can hit. Mm. And even the Oilers, you watch last night and immediately they're down 5-1 or whatever to the Pittsburgh Penguins, and it wasn't necessarily a glorious showing from them either. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that really answers your question in terms of the tiers, but I feel like there's probably those two up top, then another two, and then it's like a glut of four or five teams that if they get hot and get healthy and make a good move, could jump into one of those higher tiers.
I am kind of waiting for the year where, and maybe it doesn't happen, but the year where the Jets just have Hellebuck like win them two or three rounds on his own, and that gets them there. They're as close as they can get to the cup. Like, I don't think they're ever going to go into playoffs unless they make a bunch of ads to and be a cup favorite. But it's always going to be like, oh, you got to worry about Connor Hellebuck just winning a series. I wonder if that's going to happen for them this year, or if it'll happen at all at any point in future years.
Yeah, it seems like they're certainly due for it. I mean, he had a really tough series last year against the Avs. It was tough to blame him because they just got absolutely blitzed by the Avs' speed and scoring depth. So it wasn't his fault, but it wasn't a glorious showing from him either. He's been clearly the best goalie yet again this year. I'd like to see them, especially considering they have a bit of a cushion, ease up on his workload a little bit down the stretch. I don't think he has to play 65 games the way he does every year. It'd be nice to have him a bit more fresh heading into that postseason. But yeah, I think the Jets are there. I mean, they have the most continuity out of anyone. They have the number one ranked power play. Those top two scoring lines are quite good. I think similar to the Canucks, they probably need to add another top four defenseman realistically to really cement themselves there. But yeah, this Jets team's really good, even though their record has fallen off a little bit after that hot start.
Let me drop a player comp for you. I want to get your take on this. Gabe Vilardi, Thomas Holmstrom.
Mm.
What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. Vilardi probably is the best net front player in the league right now. Like, he's such a handful to deal with. His hands are so good and tight. You watch, like, he does those little goal line plays where he brings it out or goes through the legs, setting it up into the slot for the one-time bump pass. He does it all. So his movement is certainly, like, wow, it's kind of cringeworthy watching him try and move up the ice. I know he's had all the back injuries as well in the past too, so you're just kind of hoping he's going to be able to hold up physically. But once you get down below the dots in the offensive zone, especially in the power play, he really is so fun to watch. So, I mean, I love Vilardi's game. And I think, if anything, he's probably more or less limited, I guess, than Holmstrom was. But maybe I'm just remembering, like, the latter years of Holmstrom, when he really was just kind of just standing in front of the net, taking a bunch of punishment and doing all exclusively the greasy stuff. I feel like Vilardi has more playmaking chops to his game, but it is probably kind of like an extension of that, or a version 2.0 or a modern version of that game.
So looking forward after that, the Canucks return home. They play the Kings on Thursday. What's different about the Kings this year compared to last season?
Not much, to be honest with you.
Great.
Yeah. It is a lot more of the same. They're the best defensive team in the league by any metric, whether it's goals against or expected goals against, slot shots allowed, all that stuff. They're number one, which is incredibly impressive, because not only has Drew Doughty not played this year, but their number two defenseman last year, Matt Roy, also left in free agency. They replaced that internally without missing a beat. I guess the one argument for them being different this year is young players like Alex Turcotte has finally found a role and is playing on the top line. Alex Laferriere took a big step as well. Now, Byfield regressed quite a bit this year, although he had a game recently against the Oilers where he just was the best player on the ice and took over. And so if he's able to channel that more frequently, then maybe they have some more offensive juice to actually make this year different than previous ones. But it's kind of ironic, because with the Golden Knights ripping off all these wins they have over the past month, the Kings keep winning themselves. But all it does is just further establish that they're just going to play the Oilers in the 2-3 matchup in the Pacific, most likely, for the fourth straight year. And that just must be so disheartening, because regardless of what's happening, not enough has changed between the two teams to make you feel like there's any real reason to believe that the result's going to be different.
Surely one year they just win, though. Eventually, right? Maybe?
I don't know, because even in previous years, like, the McDavid and Dreisaitl haven't, they've been alternating not being at full health, and it still hasn't mattered, because the other one then just picks up the slack and carries the other. And so I guess maybe if both guys were limited, then things could be different. But
so many things have to go their way for it to happen.
It's tough. They just don't have the offensive firepower, unfortunately. Like, they can play a really good cohesive game for 55 minutes, and then there's going to be a 5-minute stretch somewhere in there where those two guys in the Oilers just create a goal or two, and that's going to be the difference. And the Kings just don't really have that to match it. I guess if somehow just the Oilers' goaltending just completely fell apart and they were just giving up goals as soon as the Kings crossed the blue line, maybe then that could happen. But in a realistic scenario, it feels like they're kind of doomed to this just fate for the fourth straight season.
Dim, just generally, like, when you think about how the Canucks have looked in recent games, whether it's against the Habs or the game against the Caps the other night, I mean, what are you seeing out of this Canucks team? I know fans in our inbox, there's a lot of concern about sort of where this team's game is tracking. And yet I struggle to see, especially like Dylan Gunther out indefinitely with a lower body injury, which absolutely sucks. You know, this Flames team, you know, I think they have staying power. I don't think they're going away. But I struggle to think that they're actually going to be able to pass this Canucks team as they return to full health, unless there's another nightmare bump in the road for this Canucks team as we go here. Where are you at with where the Canucks game is at? Is the Chicken Little act in Vancouver justified in your view?
Yeah. I mean, I think both things can be true. Like, I think you can feel a reasonable amount of confidence that the teams behind them don't have the juice themselves to like legitimately scare them or take that spot from them, while also being concerned about what you're seeing in terms of how that matches up heading into the playoffs against the other teams that are actually going to be competing with. I thought that as the game in Washington progressed, like, there were more positive signs. The first period was incredibly ugly in terms of how little they generated. I think a lot of our concerns still linger in terms of how this team looks when Quinn Hughes isn't on the ice. And there's no real reason to believe that that's going to change until the personnel does. So, yeah, I think it's a problem. But also at the same time, I think it's a testament to them like grinding out points the way they have while they're shorthanded with the team not playing well. Like, there is something to that. And at this point of the season, I feel like that's probably what matters more than anything, just to keep your head above water and keep ahead of both the Utah Hockey Club and the Calgary Flames. But yeah, it clearly needs to get better in terms of feeling confidence that they can actually compete with the other teams in the Pacific.
Yeah, and especially like going through the text box and stuff, I don't think I've seen any legitimate concern about like, hey, they might not make the playoffs. And yeah, like everyone now and then throws that in there, but it's more about like, hey, what are they going to do when they get to the playoffs? Because it just doesn't feel like they have what they had last year, where it was just the vibes were so good. Even if it, like, under the hood, it wasn't where it needed to be, it just felt like they had this almost inevitable feel. And then obviously that can only take you so far, but it doesn't feel like the team has that yet this year. Maybe they peak at the right time, but it does. It feels like the remaining games are about getting that kind of feeling back.
Well, I think that they feel that way probably internally as well, right? Like, it's tough to make any sort of rash moves or judgments until you actually see the team for an extended period at full health. And we haven't really seen that for a long time now, if at all, this season. So until they get guys back and they're actually healthy and playing at their best, and then if these struggles continue and it's as lopsided as it is for Quinn Hughes's with or without you stats, then I think you'd have real reason for concern and probably a panic move. But I imagine they're trying to extend the runway as much as they can leading up to the trade deadline to actually first see that before they do anything.
We got to go. Dimitri, thank you for taking the time.
Thanks, buddy.
Enjoy all the hockey games this weekend. Wild card weekend, too. Enjoy that. Looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Heck, I have
to wait till Monday, though, to watch the Vikings, which is just horrible. I have to work during the game. Anyway, that's a personal Josh issue. I'll get over it. On the other side, Barkley Farnetta, Vancouver Giants GM, is going to join us. Before we go, JamPro, from warehouses to washrooms and everywhere in between, JamPro keeps workplaces tidy, clean, and disinfected. For a free quote, visit jampro.ca. Vancouver Giants GM Barkley Farnetta, trade deadline just passed. He will join us on Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott, Wolf Thomas Strand, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott, Wolf, Thomas Strantz here with you, coming to you live from the Kintec studio. And you can text in on the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line. Canucks taking on the Hurricanes today at 4. We will get into more of that as the show goes on. By the way, moments ago, the Canucks tweeting that general manager Patrick Alvin announced today that forward Elias Pettersson has been activated from IR. So I would expect him to play tonight in Carolina. Let's bring in Vancouver Giants GM. They are in action tonight. The Giants taking on the Kamloops Blazers. It is Barkley Farnetta. Appreciate you taking the time, Barkley. How are you?
Hey, no problem. I'm great. I'm actually just sitting down in the hotel lobby filling out some forms for our league now that the trade deadline's passed.
Yeah, so trade deadline passed. It wasn't a super busy deadline for you guys, but what do you think of the work you got done ahead of the deadline?
Well, happy. I mean, I think that our team had shown us that we have a lot of good players. Our scoring is way up from last year. I think that we needed a sort of the acquisition of Maxim Minoff was he's a heavier, harder player, and it was something that we needed a little more grit up front. So I think he brings that. He had 50 points in the WHL last year. He attended a Toronto Maple Leafs training camp this past fall. So he sort of brings a bigger body presence to us. So quite happy with that. And then, adding a 19-year-old goaltender, I think, has sort of helped establish. I think that Matthew Hutchison and Hoodie were doing okay, but I think that we needed just a little more consistency. And, they're both going to be very good goalies as they age up, but we just wanted a guy a little bit older.
Barkley, what did you make about, I know it's not in your division, but the Central really loaded up. I mean, what do you make of the sort of state of the WHL field here going into the playoffs?
Wow. Making, so, I mean, there could be a really good team that doesn't get out of the first round if they face each other in a matchup over there, depending on how they seed. So, you know, every organization has its own sort of goals and purposes. I'm certainly not going to criticize any of the teams that went for it by making those deals because, you know, we've been in that situation and we hope to be in that situation again. Obviously, it's way better when you can build through the drafts or you're listing your players, but, you know, the addition of a World Junior guy is a big sort of boost to a team. So, you know, it'll be really interesting to see the outcome of it, though, because like I said, you know, you could be out in the first round and the assets are gone. But teams like Moose Jaw and Wenatchee have done a good job at recovering things when they've done that. So we'll see where that ends up.
Back to the Vancouver Giants coming out of the Christmas break, 5-1 in the first six, had a couple losses in Prince George. But what have you kind of thought of the form of your team coming out of the Christmas break?
Well, we're pretty happy. And even the Prince George games, you know what? Like, we should have won the second one for sure. We sort of had a little bit of a meltdown in the last 2 minutes at, you know, with a ill-timed penalty and then maybe a miscue between a goalie and a defenseman, which certainly was kind of hard to watch. But, you know, overall, measuring ourselves against Prince George, who are first in our division, I thought we could have won either one of those games, to be completely honest. And, I'm not worried about who we match up. I think that we have a good group as long as we sort of stay the course and the players buy in. And I think we've got four pretty good lines going here. So it was a good test up there, but I'm pretty happy with our team. I think that if we can consistently perform like that, be very happy, because that's sort of been, for me, it's been a little up and down through the course of the season.
One of the drivers behind your post-Christmas success, Burke Hood, 17 years old, had a back-to-back shutouts recently. I mean, a big, long shutout streak going. I mean, what's he done to sort of stabilize your group? What sort of potential are you looking at with him here?
Well, obviously, like, that's an incredible feat in itself. There aren't many goalies in the league, let alone the Giants, that have ever done that. So he's playing with some confidence. He's settling in. It's really nice to see. We think there's a really big upside with him. For the future, I think there's a strong possibility that he gets drafted even this season, just with his frame and the way he moves. I know Paul Fricker certainly thinks highly of him, and, you know, having him play like that, like, he had an incredible season last year. Like, he didn't lose a game in Brandon for the U18 team there, and they went to the TELUS Cup, and he really had a good season. So it took him a little longer to sort of maybe become consistent at this level, but expected with a 17-year-old goaltender, the league's hard. There's good shooters and there's good teams in this league. So, but I was really happy with how he approached those. Hopefully he can continue that sort of moving forward.
It is Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott, Wolf, Thomas Drantz, joined by Vancouver Giants general manager Barkley Parnetta. Barkley, wanted to talk about your captain, Mezden Leslie. 39 points this season. That's fourth among all WHL defensemen. 10 points in the last 7 games. What can you say about how he's been playing for the Giants lately?
So he really has grown with our organization. Initially, when he came in, he was a run-and-gun guy that would just rip up the ice whenever he wanted. And now he's starting to develop a defensive game and much more mindful of the rest of the game aside from just getting points on the board. I got to be honest, he is sort of an analytical darling. So, you know, there are teams that in the NHL that might just look at analytics. And I was told, and I don't know, but I believe that he is like a top 10 analytical defenseman in the CHL. So, and I'm not sure if it's Corsi or what ratings these teams were using when they told me this, but he's really rounded his game out and become much more responsible. So it's on any given night, he's usually our best guy. And obviously I'm paired up with Ryan Lynn, who's just an incredible player, has allowed him to do that. If you can believe a 16-year-old has helped him, he really has.
Yeah, I mean, Ryan Lynn, there's a lot of Western scouts I talk to that buzz about this kid. Some guys who think that he's going to be a fixture for Team Canada at a variety of tournaments, U20 level, et cetera, going forward. I mean, what impresses you most watching him play, Barkley?
Look, I was the manager of the Team Canada White at the U17s, and Ryan was our stellar on defense, and I had a coaching staff that isn't from this league there, and we won the gold medal, but they were just, it's nice to see people from outside the organization. Obviously we think extremely high of this young man, but to hear the details of his game are so good from these other Quebec League coaches or Ontario League coaches, it's pretty mm-hmm. incredible. Anything they're trying to teach other players, this kid is already doing on his own. So, you know, whether it's finishing in front, if you watch him at our games, you know, his exits, his entries, like this guy just, it's quietly going on, but the more you watch him, the more you're like, wow, like this guy has an impact on every shift. IQ off the charts. It really is. His IQ is incredible. So, and it's not just offense, like his defensive ability is incredible. So no, he's going to be something else. We're really excited about the future with him. And I would expect him probably not to be a full term Giant. I would expect to see him moving on sooner than later.
Hey, Barkley, really appreciate you taking the time and looking forward to tonight's game and tomorrow back at the LEC against Kelowna.
Yeah, and Drance, are you back in van now or where are you, in Toronto still?
Yeah, I'm in Toronto, but I got to get out, and I will.
Okay, all right. Good stuff, guys. Thanks.
I will. When I'm back, before the Four Nations break or at least during it, I'll definitely come out.
All right. Well, stay away from the steakhouses downtown. Those are good places.
Yeah, there's a Barbarian's Filet with my name on it, no question.
All right, there you go. All right.
Hey, Barkley, appreciate it. Thank you. Have a good one. There is Barkley Parnett of Vancouver Giants GM joining us on Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott-Wolf and Thomas Drance. Like I mentioned, the Vancouver Giants, they are playing in Kamloops tonight, back home tomorrow at the LEC to take on the Kelowna Rockets. But I mentioned the breaking news before we had Barkley on there. Canucks tweeting out 9 minutes ago, GM Patrick Alvin announcing today that Elias Pettersson has been activated from injured reserve, so expect him to play today against Carolina. And we kind of talked a bit about it in the whiteboard, but I don't know where to have my expectations for Elias Pettersson right now. He has been a very confusing player all season. I mean, basically for a year at this point. And I hope he picks up where he left off in that San Jose game where he had that goal. He had a very determined shot past Askarov in that game. And I liked the Pettersson we saw in that game. It felt like he was trending in the right direction. And then obviously things don't go his way with the injury. So I do wonder what we'll see from him today against the Carolina Hurricanes, a team that he was linked to in the past. In trade talks,
not just days gone by. Yeah, and I would say not just linked to, like they made an effort. They mm-hmm. made an offer. An offer that ultimately I think stimulated a resolution, a pretty team-friendly one ultimately, in terms of the Canucks getting that long-term extension done, which, you know, I think has not necessarily provided them the value that we all expected it to, right? When it was signed, I mean, I thought that was just an absolute home run cut for the team, and I still believe that. Certainly a home run cut process-wise, but we all know that, you know, you can almost chart when Pettersson's struggle started based on when that deal was signed, right? Like, it's wild sort of what we've seen occur or go on with Pettersson's game since. Look, our expectations have to be set high. This is Elias Pettersson.
Makes a lot of money.
We're talking about Elias Pettersson, man. Like, we have to have our expectations sky high for this guy, I think, always. Now, we can moderate it a little bit, I suppose, given that he's just getting back from an injury here. I think we have a sense, maybe, that he hasn't been at his best over the course of this year, in part because of an injury or a lingering injury. Certainly the speed hasn't been there. There's some evidence that maybe there's something else going on to some extent when we think about what we're seeing from him. But I mean, look, this guy's an all-star player. Like, this guy's a superstar level player. He's paid like a superstar level player. They need him to be great. You know, now the one thing he's done reliably all year, even if he hasn't been throwing 100 miles per hour, 102 miles per hour on the radar gun, the Canucks have at least controlled scoring chances, more than 50% of scoring chances in Pedersen's minutes away from Hughes. They've also won their minutes on the scoreboard in Pedersen's minutes away from Hughes. He's the only centerman on this team for whom that's true, right? JT Miller has been outscored 2-1 in minutes away from Quinn Hughes. Bluger and Suter, you'll find similar sort of patterns there in terms of the impact Hughes has on their minutes. But with Pedersen, he actually is able to keep his head above water. The Canucks have been able to win their minutes when Pedersen plays away from Quinn Hughes. Well, that's a huge blanket that you're effectively able to throw over. Like, it's a fire blanket. You're able to throw it over your non-Hughes minutes, which have been something of a fire for the Canucks, and, you know, at least slow it down a little bit. Mm-hmm. If he's able to even just do that tonight, you're not laughing necessarily because you want him to win those minutes decisively and dominate the game because he's that kind of player with that type of ceiling, even if it's been a while since we saw it consistently. But that's a huge boost for this team. If he's just able to sort of, you know, because look, we're at a point where the Canucks play like the Hurricanes or the Devils in Hughes' minutes, right? The problem is that they play like a more pop gun version of the Detroit Red Wings in minutes when Hughes isn't on the ice.
Yeah.
If Pedersen can turn that into more like you're like the St. Louis Blues in minutes when Hughes is not on the ice, that's a huge impact on what this team is. You know, simply by raising the floor of one of this team's biggest problems. So that I think is sort of where our baseline expectation should be set against a pretty difficult opponent. But you know, it's not going to be easy here. It's not going to be an easy game to return in. The Hurricanes take away time and space. They're pretty physical. They play fast. And we don't know a lot about what's ailing Pedersen, right? So we're not going to know, you know, where he's at until we see him. You know, the fact that he was cleared but not necessarily feeling up to returning against Washington, for example, like, does that imply that there's a discomfort level here, right? Like that, you know, if you're cleared but you're not returning, then it's usually that hints at pain management as opposed to something that can get worse.
Yeah.
Right? But if there's a pain management issue, if a player feels encumbered, and we've kind of seen it with Pedersen in particular, that, like, you know, I've often said in describing his game that he seems to be a finely tuned instrument, right? Like, his game is so precise, so precision based, that when things are working for him, he's able to pick these corners and find these passes that, you know, no one else in the world is able to do, really. I mean, there's a few guys, but it's a short list of guys who are able to do some of the things that he's capable of doing. It's why he's been a dominant force in this league, despite not being, you know, an elite speed guy or an elite size guy. You know, he just outthinks and outskills his opponents. And when he's on and when he's healthy, you know, we've seen that, and it's scintillating to watch. But when he has played injured in the past, or when we've had a sense that he's not 100%, you know, we've seen his B game look a little bit maddening to fans and observers, right? So, you know, I suppose there is a fair bit of doubt about exactly what level he'll be at on his return. But man, the Canucks need him, and they need him to be great without question, not just tonight, but down the stretch.
This text, 650-650 from Johnny Mack, Elias Pedersen and JT Miller can end the trade rumors by combining for 7 or 8 points against a lethargic Leafs team on Hockey Night in Canada. The Canucks do play the Leafs tomorrow. A big night would probably go a long way in terms of quieting the noise, because you're at the epicenter of the hockey world, and if you can show that everything's clicking at the when you're playing against the Leafs, That goes a long way in the public appeal, at least for some media around the country. Go ahead.
And think about the conversation, right? Think about the conversation we might be having around this team in 72 hours, right? Or less, 48 hours, if they're able to, for example, defeat both the Maple Leafs and the Hurricanes in a back-to-back set, right? Like, you beat the Maple Leafs in a back-to-back set on Hockey Night in Canada, I'd have to imagine that that's going to significantly impact how Canucks fans are feeling about this team, right? Like, Canucks fans will be pretty thrilled about that. We know how much beating Toronto means to Canucks fans. And frankly, to the organization.
Yeah, I was going to say, the Canucks tend to always show up for these games against the Leafs. Like, they put in very consistent, good efforts, one of their best games of the year, usually, not every time, when they're in Toronto or they're playing the Leafs here in Vancouver. It's one of the games the team tends to wake up for, even if they're in a bit of a slump, whenever they tend to run into the Maple Leafs. But yeah, you're right. It would be, hey, if you're able to get two wins here, and again, you look at tonight's game, it is a bit of a scheduled win for the Canucks, but anytime you're playing the Hurricanes, there's inherent qualifications on that because they're a very good team and they're hard to beat at any time of the season. But if you get through four games of this road trip, and especially a road trip we looked at as a very difficult one for the Canucks, and you're 2-0-2, that changes things. And then you go into Winnipeg and you're kind of playing with house money and you're back home on Thursday. So we'll see how this goes for the Canucks in these next two nights. But a lot can shift. A lot of the conversation can shift between where we are now and Sunday and Monday, when you and Jamie are back here talking about how these two games went. The other thing we will expect to see in one of these games, probably tonight, would be Thatcher Demko returning for the Vancouver Canucks. Multiple reports suggesting he will start. It does make sense. You kind of want to give him, I don't know if the team is the softer landing spot, but again, referencing the schedule, It's a bit of a tired Hurricanes team. The Canucks are going to be rested as opposed to playing on the second half of a back-to-back if you play Demko tomorrow. So this does feel like a bit of a softer landing spot for Thatcher Demko playing tonight as opposed to playing tomorrow in Toronto.
Yeah, although the Carolina Hurricanes are the far more prolific rush attacking team than the Maple Leafs. So, that is a mitigating factor here. But I think you're still right that getting him out, and also not having him like do the backup thing today, right? Where you are, you know, because the backup's job on a game day, like you're the guy skating with the scratches in the morning, right? You're the guy with the heavier workload during warmups. Then there's still a chance you play, mm-hmm. right? And if you're coming back from injury, like what if Lankanen were to get hurt tonight, right? Demko gets forced in the game and then has to play a back to back after traveling, right? Like I think in a lot of ways it's almost a risk management thing. Right. Like now you get like a normal routine game day as a starter. You start tonight. Right. And then there's sort of no risk on the back end or far less risk on the back end. And a starter usually skates on game day anyway. So Lankanen, you know, probably rinses the scratches as his warm up in the game day. So you can focus on recovery. I mean, the whole thing lines up far better to bring a guy back in the first leg of a back to back. And I'd expect that's partly what the Canucks are thinking here with Demko. Yeah, I mean, we sort of know that the rust has still been there. I think that Seattle game, interestingly enough, the one that he left injured, I think that featured his best 20 minutes of hockey, right? Certainly keeping the score tight in the first 7 minutes when the Canucks really started the game discombobulated and were giving up tons of rush chances to the Kraken. His sort of the goal that beat him early aside, because that was one he'd want back, you know, aside from that, he was sensational before he had to leave that game, including a clutch stop on Bjorkstrand before Connor Garland sort of gave the Canucks that late lead. You hope that he, like Pettersson, right, is able to sort of pick up where he left off before the back spasm started, because that was a very promising sign for him in that game until it kind of went sideways on him health-wise with whatever happened in his back. So, I think we're with Demko more than Pettersson. I think we're relaxing our expectations. We know that he's still shaking rust off, getting, you know, used to where his game is at post, knee tear. And we'll see how he fares against a Carolina Hurricanes team that can absolutely get after you with some very high danger looks.
Before we go, Eric Francis, Sportsnet writer, reporter, spoke to Rasmus Anderson, someone that Canucks fans have been targeting at times as a guy that could potentially be a deadline acquisition, whatever it is, if the Flames were to fall out of this playoff picture. Eric Francis, speaking of Rasmus Anderson, who has this year left on his contract, 1 year after, good interview, but he does mention the Canucks in it. He said, Anderson says, "I hate the Oilers. I hate the Canucks. And that's just the way I am." He says, "Of course, I would love to stay in Calgary, but I've heard from everyone else who has been in my situation that it is a business. So we'll see what happens." So he's admitted his Canucks hate. So when he's eventually traded to Vancouver, as It happens for every Calgary Flame at some point in their life. He will have to walk back those comments. He'll have to be like, you know what? I don't hate the Canucks anymore. They're great. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I wouldn't read too much into it one way or the other. You know, like, you know, Nikita Zadorov was throwing darts at everybody.
Yeah.
Right. Like,
I love it.
Equal opportunity. Yeah. Equal opportunity dart thrower. He was a Flames fan. Then he's throwing darts at the Flames. He's throwing darts at the Oilers once he joins the Canucks. You know, the guys that talk well, and Rasmus Anderson is one of them, like, they're going to say fun stuff. And then if business realities, or if the Canucks make the best offer, like, we know Craig Conroy is not afraid to deal in division. We know that there's a good relationship there. And I don't think this would be a tough one to walk back. Like, I did hate the Canucks when I was with the Flames, and now I hate the Flames because I'm with the Canucks, even though I loved my time in Calgary. Like, pretty easy to put a nice little shiny veneer on that should things break a certain way in this case.
Definitely. I appreciate everyone texting in today. That's going to do it. Thank you to everyone texting in, everyone listening. Thank you to Lena. Thank you to Costa producing the show. Thank you to Thomas Strantz, my co-host. I've been Josh Elliott-Wolf. Jamie Dodd back on Monday, and your regular scheduled Canucks Talk programming will resume.
But I'm not.
Oh, you're not.
I'm off next week, so I'll be with everybody again following a brief vacation, but I'll be back on the 20th of January. So I'm off next week.
Wow.
You'll have Dodd to keep y'all company.
Have fun. Jamie Dodd and others will be here on Canucks Talk. Thank you to everyone once again for listening. This has been Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650.